Gotham, a crazy podcast about DC, with your host E-Rock and PD. When we speak up, get your geeks up, cause you know you about to get geeked up. So sit back, relax, and get comfy. Lose your mind like Solomon Grundy, and listen to a show that won't be forgotten, coming straight out of Gotham.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Outta Gotham. We have episode 8 today. We are a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. I am your co-host on the other side of the Hudson River. I am Peter M. Vera. And today we're recording on June 22nd, 2020. That's a correct date. Yes, it is. And Today's show is crazy. Insane show. It's absolutely nuts. I can't contain my excitement. So now, let me introduce you to my co-host, the man who holds the longest field goal in the history of Ronkonkoma High School, Mr. Eric.
Oh, God. How do I follow that up? Hello, Pete.
Tell them how long your field goal was.
It was about 65 yards.
65 yards. Still the longest one in the history of Ronkonkoma High School.
It's crazy. People still remember me for that. Doesn't matter where I am either. I could be anywhere. They're like, hey, aren't you the guy? I'm like, yeah, that's me.
I got the golden foot.
So, yes, everyone, welcome to episode 8, Straight Out of Gotham. As Pete said, I'm Eric Holzman, your co-host. We have a very cool show for you tonight. News dropped today, so we wanted to get out here and bring our brand of flavor. Bring our brand of flavor to the topic. But we cannot do it alone this time. We needed to bring someone from the outside in to help us out. You guys know him. You've heard his voice. You've heard him talk football. You've heard him talk Batman. You've read his reviews on Batman on Film. You know him from Minnesota. When you go there, you just say his name and everyone's like, oh, we know who he is. It's Minnesota's own Garrett Grev. Garrett, what's up?
Oh, I'm so glad that you cannot hear me blush. You are far too kind and apparently far too powerful. I didn't know high schoolers had legs that strong. So like between the two of you guys, I'm talking to like two of the most masculine dorks around, between your powerful kicking leg and Pete's thick, luxurious beard, I'm just sitting here up in Minnesota in awe of the surroundings I find myself virtually talking to right now. So, thanks, guys, for having me on. And episode 8, geez, this thing's moving right along. You guys are putting some in the bank right now.
Yeah, the pandemic will do that to you. Gave us time that we wouldn't have had. So we've just taken advantage of it. And it's been a lot of fun. And we've gotten a ton of good feedback. We've gotten some negative too, I've heard. But it's
really?
Okay.
I haven't heard any negative. We're the
I embrace it all. I embrace the haters. I embrace the lovers. We're all here to have a good time, talk about geeky stuff, and just cool out. So, Garrett, again, thank you for hopping on. It's a great to have you. I've been wanting to have you on for a couple weeks.
Oh, I've been wanting to be on, man. Last week I wanted to get on, and then, you know, sort of dad schedules got in the way with some busyness. You know, kids will do that to you. I've listened to our friends join, and I've listened to the episodes, and I sort of sit there going like, oh, when's it going to be my turn? You know, but it's fun. Thanks, guys, for having me. And I could not be more excited about the episode that I get to join on. Just super exciting. Great stuff going on.
Yeah. So we're going to start on a somber note today, though.
Yeah.
this is the down part of the program. We got news today that Joel Schumacher passed away. Joel Schumacher obviously is best known in these circles for being the director of Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. But he has such a tremendous filmography, movies for all generations. He's starting with St. Elmo's Fire, The Lost Boys. He did Flatliners. Tons of well-known actors and actresses were in those films. Then he went into his little John Grisham area where he did The Client, did A Time to Kill. People know Falling Down as well, which is the Michael Douglas movie where he kind of goes crazy and goes a little nuts. That was Joel Schumacher. And then, of course, the Batman movies. He also directed Phantom of the Opera, the musical Phantom of the Opera. So he has a very, very vast filmography and really diverse. Like, if you look at some of the films and the things he did, very diverse filmography. So we got the news today, that he had passed. And since he did do two Batman movies, and we just celebrated the 25th anniversary of Batman Forever, I'm kind of glad he got to see, he, at least be, he was alive for that. But he passed away from cancer, I believe. He was fighting cancer for a long time, and he passed away. So just a few words, Pete, on Joel Schumacher.
I kind of grew up with Joel Schumacher and Batman. You know, I was at the right age of 9 when Forever came out. And, you know, just having to see all those movies, you know, in, you know, retrospective, just like The Lost Boys and Flatliners. And I vaguely remember The Client, but A Time to Kill, I remember because I was like, oh, this guy directed Batman. I should see this movie, even as a young kid, you know. And The Phone Booth, I really liked. 8mm was interesting. The only movie of his I really don't like is The Number 23, and that he did that with Jim Carrey. But, I've been talking a lot about Joel lately, you know, recently because of Forever 25. And I just hope he saw the love that that movie has. And, you know, I know a lot of people lump in him with just like Batman and Robin and the nipples, but he did something really creative with Gotham City, and he rejuvenated the franchise. He gave me my first Batmania. So like, I'm very grateful for that. And I hope he was just able to see, like, you know, hey, look, like we all love Batman Forever. Like, you know, people complain about little things, but for, you know, for what it is, like, we all enjoy it. And I'm just glad that that film was able to give him some love. And I hope he went on a high note, and, you know, just the best to his family.
Garrett, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I'd echo, you know, a lot of what both of you have said. You know, I'll touch on Batman Forever just because it's probably the nearest film to what we talk about a lot, and what's been talked about recently, to Pete's point, you know, with the 25th anniversary. But that's a movie that I've really sort of never lost my love for. You know, I was a preteen when that came out, but it was sort of like when you're old enough to go and get dropped off at the movies with your friends. And, you know, it's 1995 and there's Jim Carrey there and it's Batman and it's neon and it's kind of fun. It's a little bit goofier. Like, that was the movie of that summer. Yeah. You know, not just for, you know, 12-year-old Garrett, but really across all audiences, that was just a huge hit. And yeah, it was goofier in some places and it had its own sort of sense of humor and identity, but I always just really loved it. And, even Batman Robin, like I've said my piece on Batman and Robin over the years, but I've also always said, like, that's a fair, take on Batman. That's a version of Batman that's out there. It was loud. It was cartoony. It was sort of a bit 60s Batman, and Schumacher was able to do that. And you can't argue against its aesthetics. Like, I don't like it all that much, but I think it's a fair approach. It's just not my personal favorite, but man, the visual storytelling, and it has a presence that is certainly felt. We wouldn't talk about it all these years later if it was just a bad movie. It's that it was a not a great version of Batman with some really incredible production quality. But, you know, going on to those other films, I don't want to rerun down the list, but I'll tell you, The Lost Boys is one of my all-time favorite movies, you know, ever. Just fantastic cast, fantastic story. You know, you get the Coreys together from the 80s, for those of you that are in the 80s movies for the first time. Yeah. And just really, really well done, super fun, kind of was a hit of its time, but became a cult classic. My youngest uncle, who's only, you know, maybe a dozen years older than me, not even, introduced me to that movie when I was probably too little for an R-rated movie. But it's been one of my all-time favorites. So, like, when you see the Facebook challenges that come around, it's like 10 days of 10 super influential movies or whatever. Lost Boys is on my list. I've got that on VHS. I've got it on DVD. And, you know, 80 years old, nice long life. Everybody would like to see the longer lives, of course. And it's always hard when you lose someone, but just a guy with a tremendous amount of wins, incredibly successful. And just, you know, one last thought, you know, I think we talk a lot about in superhero movies and fandom in general, in the last number of years about how important representation is. And it's a landmark when you have the first female director of a superhero movie, or, you know, the first Black director of a superhero movie. And Joel Schumacher was an out gay man who was handed a major tentpole movie in the mid 90s. And you know, that didn't really get the coverage that I think it would have today, but I think it's worth noting, kind of a pioneer in that realm, and certainly will be missed. A great storytelling voice.
Yeah, I think I can echo almost everything you said about The Lost Boys. I mean, I'm a little older than both of you, and that movie came out. I was still too young to watch it, but I had older sisters, and I might have caught it with them while they were watching it. And yeah, that's one of those movies, too, that if someone were to ask me Joel Schumacher films, that's the first. I don't think of Batman right away. I think of The Lost Boys. You know, it's just when you look at the cast, like you mentioned the Coreys, but Jason Patrick was in it, and Kiefer Sutherland was in it, and like Alex Winter from Bill and Ted. Like there were all these people, these actors who got to, you know, who grew into bigger roles and bigger parts, went on to do other things, and they're all in that film. And so, yeah, so like he did that for those actors as well. He gave them kind of their exposure. And he, it's just A Time to Kill is another one I think of. It was the first time, I mean, obviously I saw Dazed and Confused, but it was the first time I really thought Matthew McConaughey was a really good actor. was when I saw A Time to Kill. So, and again, obviously that's material based off a John Grisham book, but still he adapted it. And it's another movie that I love to watch. And it's very apropos with what's going on now in the country. So just, you know, even back then, and you could bring, if you watch that now, you kind of can get kind of a sense of the what's the word I'm looking for? How he kind of had his finger on the pulse of things. And, you know, he was just one of those filmmakers, like I said, very diverse. He could do a lot of different things. He did do a lot of different things, and he's going to be missed. He's going to be missed, you know, but like you said, he lived a nice long life. And, you know, Godspeed, Joel, man. You know, thanks for giving us all the stuff you gave us, for all the films you gave us.
He's got a hell of a resume. Check it out. It's worth looking at. That's a great catalog. He's directed some really great movies.
Yeah. You know, you can't go wrong. There's something for everyone. I would say that. There's something for everyone in his films.
So. Yeah, just to kind of close my thoughts on a little bit, I tweeted something earlier today. If you happen to follow me on Twitter, maybe you saw it. I think some of the headlines, sort of, you know, not for the obit, but the story that he passed, were a little bit dismissive. Like I was a little bummed out to see Joel Schumacher, director of Batman films, passes away at 80. Because I mean, yeah, Batman is sort of eye catching and maybe that gets a click or something, but just with the filmography, if you only know Joel Schumacher for Batman, you don't know Joel Schumacher. So go check out some of the great movies we've talked about. And, you know, I saw other headlines that were much more reflective of what he's done, but there's a couple there. I'm just like, this guy's more than Batman, and I love Batman, but it should be noted.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely should. You know, it's sad. But like you said, he lived a long life, and he definitely contributed to society. You know, he's one of the people that could look back in his last days and say, you know what, I did good here. And like you said, definitely with the representation of him being the first gay man to direct a superhero film. You know, like you said, in today's day and age, it would have been a much bigger deal. And it's also kind of cool that it wasn't, right? It was just another guy, I guess, a guy doing a Batman movie. You know, it's a kind of a, what's it called? An indictment of society in a way, but, you know. So, Joel, again, thanks for everything. And I hope you rest in peace. Hope you rest in peace. So, last week, we got another little bit of news, or some new footage anyway. We got a trailer for the very successful Doom Patrol show that's on DC Universe. We got an extended trailer for season 2. And, you know, I didn't touch on this. We could have touched. I think we could have talked about it in the last one, but we didn't touch on it. So it's much of the same. You know, it's a lot of craziness. It does introduce the Dorothy character. So those of you who do know the comic, the Doom Patrol comic, she will be involved this season. All the other usual suspects return. There's a couple twists. We have some character growth that shows little clips in each of the trailer. So I'm looking forward to it. I loved the show last year. The finale was a little disappointing, but I loved the show from as a whole. So what did you guys think of the trailer? We'll start with you, Garrett.
Yeah, you know, I really liked it a lot. It's a super interesting show, right? And it's based on some really interesting source material. So it gets wacky, it gets zany. I don't know how big of a success it's been. I know there was quite a bit of press around the first season of a show that it reminds me of, American Gods on Stars. It is just sort of like another out there, sort of supernaturally, really unique visuals, kind of bright colors with sometimes darker subject matter, a lot of times darker subject matter. And it reminds me a bit of that. And I think, you know, when the announcement was made that sort of, Doom Patrol was going to be sharing homes between the DC Universe app and HBO Max, I thought of American Gods because it kind of feels like this could be HBO's answer to that. Not that that's been a huge juggernaut, but it was a pretty well-received show. And it's sort of this a little bit darker, more, you know, adult subject matter or approach. You can say the same thing about Titans, I suppose, but it does feel like it would fit on, you know, the platform that will have, you know, True Blood and, you know, to a lesser extent, yeah, Game of Thrones, you know, with a lot more humor and wackiness. But it's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to watching it again. I agree with your thoughts on sticking the landing. It seems like the DC Universe shows don't really know how to close out a season well. So maybe that's something that will change with the switch over to HBO Max. Well, I would definitely be watching to find out for myself.
Yeah. I don't know why their finales are so... So far, we've had three of them. I mean, I didn't... no disrespect, Pete, but I didn't watch Swamp Thing, so I don't know how that ended. But for Titans, the first two seasons, and for Doom Patrol season one, yeah, they were kind of rough for me. So, Pete, what did you think of the trailer?
Eric never watches anything I tell him. He won't watch Swamp Thing. He won't watch Harley Quinn. All he wants
No. I have... Hold on. I've watched some more Harley Quinn. I'm slowly watching
it. 20-minute episodes. You watch like half of episode three. It's like, dude, okay.
I've only started watching Harley Quinn because of you, Pete, and I could not be happier. Like that show is sweet. It is funny. It's great.
It's great. But back to another DC Universe original. I do dig Doom Patrol. I like it. It's crazy. It's out there. I like it better than like the. I know the Morrison stuff is like gods. You know, it's like Bible, but like, you know, this is it's not as confusing as his writing, but you know, it's just everything. Like Dalton's great. I'm one of the few people who digs this version of Cyborg. I think he's pretty cool. Jane's awesome. Robot Man's awesome. It's just there's a lot of cool stuff. So like I'm excited to see where it goes and what the story has for us. So because I really dig season one, and I'm down for more.
I'm always down for more Brendan Fraser. I'm a big Brendan Fraser fan. I like to see him getting work again. So
I love the movie. I grew up on that movie, you know?
Absolutely. Encino Man is another one of my all-time favorite. 1992, Pauly Shore, Sean Astin, Brendan Fraser. It's a hit.
Yeah.
What about School Ties?
Sure. Yeah. Dramatic drops there.
Yeah.
Fraser could do it all, man. I don't want to steal the show and make it a Brendan Fraser podcast, but Fraser could really do it all from sort of like dopey, wide-eyed, broad, goofy comedy to, you know, some really interesting. He had some good dramatic character work. I mean, and then like that dude was almost Superman. It's crazy. I was just talking about this the other night. He was like at the height of stardom for a while there. I mean, Michael Jordan got his own Looney Tune movies, and then Brendan Fraser got his own Looney Tune movie, and then he's just kind of disappeared. So I'm here for Doom Patrol just because I want to see that guy climb back up to the top.
His voice has always bothered me.
A little whiny.
Yeah, it's a little whiny, but I mean, I've liked a lot of things he's done, so I shouldn't really say. But his voice, I can only take so much. After a while, I'm like, all right, enough. And even on Doom Patrol, when he does the whiny stuff, I'm like, oh god, enough. Like, but I do enjoy the show. Pete, were you familiar with the Dorothy character? Are you familiar with that?
Not really. I haven't read a lot of Doom Patrol. I've only dabbled in Doom Patrol because Grant Morrison usually confuses the hell out of me. So I don't really read a lot of his stuff. I try outside of like the necessities like Arkham Asylum and Batman RIP and stuff. But he definitely throws me for a loop. But that's what I like about the show is that I can understand it. You know, like it's not crazy. It's out there, but it seems to be more simplified, and I like watching it as opposed to actually reading it. I prefer that as to the book, is what I'm saying.
So for me, the Jane character, at least in season one, the actress who played her, I think it's Diane Guerrero, I think is her name.
Yes.
Or Guerrero, right? She, to me, she was the best part of the show. Like, I thought her character obviously was the most interesting. She changes and she's basically schizophrenic and she changes into all these different kinds of crazy characters. And it seemed like this season they're expounding upon that a little more, at least from what we saw in the trailer. And they give a hint that she might be on the verge of losing it completely. And they also drop a little hint that Chief is dying. Obviously, Chief is Timothy Dalton's character. So it's going to be interesting to see what season two brings. But we're all hoping for more of season one because, that show, I mean, you had a town that was inside of a goat's ass or something?
It was so
right
nuts.
Inside of a goat. And
I like the theater that could talk. That was great.
Yep. And then the cockroach that also, I mean, there's the stuff that you would never imagine seeing they put in there. And I never had read a Doom Patrol comic before it. So for me, I went in completely blind and I love Titans, but to me, Doom Patrol is a better show. So
yeah, no, I'll agree to that.
So the trailer looks great, guys. We have something to look forward to this coming. I didn't see when it said it was coming. Oops. But I don't know when it's going to be released, but it's definitely something more of the same. And if you enjoy season one, looks like you're going to enjoy season two. So speaking of, Pete brought up Grant Morrison, who at one point was teaming with Ezra Miller to pitch a story of The Flash to DC. Remember when there was a bunch of stuff going on, and then Andy Muschietti came in, he got the role and he started developing it. Well, we got news today about what that might entail.
Boom.
And this was the news of the day, and it's going to make many, many Batman fans happy. At least it made me happy. Apparently it's going in the Flashpoint story they're going to tell, Michael Keaton will be reprising his role as Batman. This another day and during the pandemic, another bit of news that shuts down the internet. it was crazy to hear. I was surprised, but I'm all for it. They go on to say that the details are still a little murky, but he might be having a role similar to what Nick Fury's role is in the MCU. Again, we don't know anything for certain. These are just little dribs and drabs of information that's coming out. So, Pete, when you heard the news, how'd you feel?
Well, like, first of all, like, Keaton being back is like just like amazing. You know, it's nuts because like there were little hints, like, Jet was dropping his teases and everything about Keaton. Right. And I'm like, okay, so I'm like, what is this? Like, are we gonna, at first, I'm like, all right, we're gonna have like Batman 3 animated. That's cool. Keaton will voice that and that'll be awesome. I'd love to see that. It'd be great. You know, him and Burton do it in like a, I don't know, Jack Skellington, Nightmare Before Christmas type thing. Like, awesome, cool. I'm all for it. And then just you hear chatter on the internet and you see things and putting things together and you're like, oh, wow. So like, this happens. You know, the rap story drops and you're like, is this real? This is how they're going to do this. It's not Affleck. It's not Jeffrey D. Morgan. It's Keaton. So it's like, okay, like I was against the idea of having like a non-solo. I was against the Thomas Wayne Batman being in a Flash movie because I'm sick of the character. I think he's been overexposed, you know, but I'm a comic book reader. I know the general audience has no idea who this guy is. So therefore it's like, I'm already down strike one, you know? And then it's like, we're going to hijack the Flash movie and we're going to use this Flashpoint for Batman. So it's like, okay, so it's not the Flash versus the whatever member of the third greatest rogues gallery in comics history, you know, just throw that out there, strike two. So there you go. And then they're like, okay, it's Keaton in a Flashpoint movie. So basically I got hit by a pitch and I'm on first base. You know, like I'm pumped for it because like it's Keaton and I'm pumped. And it's like, okay, we're finally getting a Flash movie after Famuyiwa and Seth Graham Smith and the guys who did Game Night, you know, all those guys. So revolving door directors, writers, everything. Now Muschietti comes in. And if this is what it takes to get a Flash movie on the screen, I'm all for it. It's just weird how it's come together because you have like the Flash from this almost failed Justice League movie that we're getting a director's cut of next year, which is supposed to be like the completed vision. And then we have a Batman from 30 years ago. Uh-huh. So it's so interesting because, you know, at one point it was like, oh, it's going to be Batman Beyond. But it's like, no, this is almost something different. I just don't like the fact that like they're still trying to do this MCU thing. And if they want him to be the Nick Fury, I feel like if Keaton's going around, you know, planetary, hopping from universe to universe, collecting the heroes to fight, I don't know, whatever, like what is outside of Darkseid, what's the next big space god? Like who's coming to get them? Parallax? Like what is this threat that Batman is jumping Parallax across the portals, you know?
Yeah. No, what I mean, it? It's like, going to be interesting where to see they what go comes. From here.
What is this? Yeah. What is this all about? Who's the villain of this movie? Like, I know it's just in early stages, but like, these are my questions.
No, but and excited, they're all valid.
But I am excited to see, you know, Keaton back. That's I'm pumped for that. Suit or not, seeing him back is exciting for me.
Yeah, me too. Garrett.
My smile hurt my face. It hurt my face how smiley I was. And then, like, I'd sit for a second, and my smile would kind of calm back down. And then I'd think about it again. I'd smile even bigger and just, like, get giddy because I could not be more thrilled. I could not be more thrilled. Michael Keaton Batman is, like, it's a special thing to all of us, right? But Michael Keaton Batman is, like, my childhood. It is, you know, I was getting introduced to Batman you know, through Adam West and like the Legion of Superheroes, or what was that, Superpowers team cartoons and action figures, you know, in the 80s, and then and then Batman 1989 comes out, right? And I'm too young for my parents to be like, even though I love Batman more than anything, more than even though my mom pinned a cape on my back like every single day and hand sewed me a Adam West-esque Batman costume, I was too young to go to the theater right away because my parents needed to check it out, right? PG-13, things are blowing up in the commercials. And then okay, they talked to a friend's kid who had seen an older teenager and they said it'd be fine. And they like brought me there and they were still a little bit sketchy, but I loved it so much. And then I remember getting the VHS. It was like one of the first times they really turned around and released a movie on VHS quickly. Like it had been like almost a year, like 9 months back then, but they got it out for Christmas of 89 and one of my uncles got it for me. And just like all these fond memories connected to Michael Keaton in this role come back. And I think, you know, looking at the trajectory of Michael Keaton's career and sort of when he got back to sort of more of a critical darling with Birdman, kind of doing a riff on a guy that played, well, not kind of, you know, playing the part of a guy that played a superhero and what that did to his career. To some of the work that he's done later, I just think it's so awesome. Like I think the nostalgic Garrett couldn't be more thrilled. And then I started thinking a little bit more about like sort of where Pete's mind is, like what's this mean and what does it say about the future of DC films? And I think it's kind of rad. I think it's like sort of this awesome approach to solving a problem that the DC films had. And I, you know, God bless Jet, love him to death. I always thought, you know, while the future films were going to be sort of standalone, but not contradict the idea of a connected universe, that maybe the connected universe presence would be a bit more felt. And if that was going to be the case, there's the Batman problem. There's the, you know, who is Batman in this universe then? Is it just in the periphery? I never believed in a million years Affleck was ever going to come back in any way, shape, or form because he told us himself he thought it was going to kill him if he did. Leave that in the dust. But there would be this remaining problem of this universe would need a bat of some kind. And to have that be my childhood Batman is just so awesome. You know, like I love Christian Bale. He's probably my favorite Batman ever. But that childhood connection to Michael Keaton is just huge. And I think from a business standpoint, Pete, I know you love The Flash. You know I love The Flash. But I don't know if the general audience has been clamoring for a live-action Flash movie the way that us fans have been. And I think
the TV show plays a part in that.
Yeah, absolutely. They've sort of been satiated.
It's been around for like 5 years. You know, right. It's been around for a while.
Yep, that's a really good point. The TV show's going. So maybe like that hardcore demand, like there is a live action Flash. If you're interested in seeing a live action Flash, you can get it. Now, a big blockbuster movie is certainly different than TV and hits a broader audience. But including Michael Keaton Batmania, 1989 Batmania Michael Keaton, like highly revered, almost cult status Batman actor Michael Keaton in this movie, I think is a genius business move. And it solves a problem in the storytelling. I think it's smart. I'm super excited. You know, we haven't heard that the deal's been finalized, but put that pen to paper and let's get this bad boy going because I'm pumped.
I can't. It's so interesting to me that it's Keaton, right? I mean, as he was the older Batman, because I feel like this is kind of similar to Crisis on Infinite Earths, where we had Kevin Conroy, who's never been a live action Batman, but he played the older Batman. It's similar to me. It brings bells, and that's a Flash told story as well. So it's mm-hmm. it's interesting how like the Flash. This is true to who the Flash is. The Flash does this. He goes universe to universe. He travels through time. That's how he found Jay Garrick, the other Flash from Earth 2. You know, like this is as upset as I am that I'm not getting a true Flash movie versus like the top. This is true to who the character is. So I'm not necessarily upset about it. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Pete. And I just wonder if this approach is wise. I think that, let me say that this way. I think this could be a very good approach to get a very broad audience bought in to the Flash in maybe a way that Justice League didn't pull off. You know, Ezra Miller is not, he doesn't have the same sort of like in your face, macho gravitas, obviously, that a Jason Momoa has. And people got bought into that Jason Momoa and were kind of like, yeah, I want to see a wacky underwater sci-fi cornball, you know, sort of rolling good time action adventure with this dude. I don't know that anybody ever got there with, you know, quippy brunch jokes as much. And I'm not dumping on those. I thought he was really funny.
They're also pushing him in the Fantastic Beasts movie. So like, he's like a Warner Brothers guy.
Oh, he's a Warner Brothers.
They want him to succeed. Like he's in a lot of the Harry Potter universe and essentially the DC comic universe.
He's a studio dude.
That's their moneymakers. Yeah. They want him to do good. They're trying to push him.
So I think it might be kind of cool to say, like, here's this big event Flash movie that we've got this other stuff going on. Everyone's going to go see this thing. And then guess what we get to do after that? We got you to buy in to this Flash, and the next Flash movie is sort of that standalone. You know, maybe it's, you know, Captain Boomerang or Gorilla Grodd, or you know what I mean? Like maybe that's where they take it. They get you bought in. Captain Cold is there next time, you know, like, this is the hook to get you to that next one. Cause I don't know that the demand has been there on its own.
Yeah. I hear all of that. I do think one thing the CW show has done is at least bring people to the character. So if you didn't know him, I mean, I think everyone has a general idea of who the Flash is, but obviously if you don't know anything about his story, I think the CW and the Arrowverse brought people to the Flash who wouldn't have been Flash fans before. So yes, there's always going to be, well, it's not Grant Gustin. That was a big deal before when he was cast for originally, that was a big deal then. But I do think that you will have more people now interested in the film. Now there might not be like, obviously like a Batman movie or a Superman movie, but you will have more people who at least now, who maybe before, especially women who might have been like, well, you know what? I wasn't too keen on the Flash. Now they might want to go see it from that show. So, but yeah, you bring up a bunch of good points about, you know, what happens next, right? Well, what does this do now? You're bringing in Keaton. So what does this do to the rest of their, I guess, quote unquote, shared universe, right? They're clearly telling you they're not out of the shared universe game.
No.
Now they're, right? So now you're adding this element to it. It really opens up a bunch of possibilities of ways you can go.
It almost seems like they're not in the shared universe game. They're in the multiverse game, because Ezra Miller's Flash has been on television with Grant Gustin's Flash. So this is already something he's already done. He's already gone somewhere else.
Yes.
You know, now he's going to whatever universe Batman 89 is designated to. I don't know, but that's where he's going. So this is the second time he's done this. So it seems not to necessarily be a shared universe as much as just is a multiverse. Like they're just picking movies from the multiverse, and that's what they're showing us essentially.
I think that's so awesome. And I think that's where, you know, like when you see some of the like Nick Fury, you know, the Nick Fury of the DCEU or, you know, the MCU approach, like I really don't know that this is a real MCU approach. Like what if this is the Grant Morrison approach. And it's all real. It all happened. All those stories from when you were a kid, all those different versions of this, of the character that didn't make sense for a few issues while that other writer was writing it. And then we switched over and that none of that stuff seemed to really happen. Like Morrison's approach to Batman was all a Batman. Yeah. You guys know this, yeah, right?
You're
not telling you
correct.
Anything yeah. new. What I if this is the cinematic version of that? Like it that's is. Just so rad.
That's the crazy part, is that exactly what this is. It's, you know, what is it, was it Batman RIP? We mentioned that earlier. I mentioned it earlier. Was that the story? It was part of the story. Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, the issue where like Batman, he's got the guy with the knight and the squire, you know what I'm saying? Like all those Batmans from all the universe. And it's like all the stories happen. 100%. I totally agree with you. That's exactly what this is.
That's what now, yeah. And like,
oh, sorry. One thing I was going to say, just, you know, Pete, you said if it's Michael Keaton bouncing around from reality to reality, that might be a little bit goofy. But if Flashpoint goes in and opens up this multiverse, and then things sort of like coalesce around one prime universe or Earth One universe or whatever in the movie terms they'd put this in, and Keaton is the Batman of that universe alongside, you know, existing Aquaman, existing Wonder Woman, existing Flash, like, that's a nice little merger. And then you can go off in all these goofy to other directions of you know, threats from maybe outside the universe. A reality hopping Michael Keaton might be a little bit for me to wrap my brain around, but
it sounds very Crisis on Infinite Earths, where like, you know, the Alexander Luthor of this Earth is a good guy. So we can pull that story, you know, and it seems like they're really just doing something that they would do in the comics, which is kind of inspiring in a way. You know, because this is a true comic book tale, if that's what it is. Like, this is as comic book as it gets, yeah, in my opinion. Like, that's pretty ballsy by them to do that.
Yeah. You know? Sorry, Eric, I stepped on your toes for whatever you're going to do next, but I can't let
you go. No, I was just going to say, because I had mentioned earlier when I was introducing this topic that Miller and Grant Morrison were working on a script.
Yeah.
So exactly, maybe this is, right? Like, maybe this is a
DNA left.
Yeah. Maybe this is partly some, maybe he won out. Maybe his version of the story is what they're, parts of it is what they're going with.
I'm sure he talked to Muschietti, or Muschietti talked to him at some point.
Yeah.
I feel like they always, I mean, Burton talked to Schumacher when he handed over the reins. You know, Burton essentially hired the writers too. Like it was so
collaborative.
I'm sure there was some sort of collaboration, 100%.
And it also like really puts the period on the end of the sentence that the Matt Reeves Batman is its own thing. Period. Like, yeah, completely separate. These things aren't going to cross over as of now. Who knows? Anything could happen in the future, right? But like, I'm semi-kidding about that. But I think it makes it very clear to the audience that if there's another Batman in these sort of, you know, shared multiverse movies, then it's not this Robert Pattinson thing. This, that allows it to breathe, that allows it to be its own thing and changes audience expectations around it a bit.
Yeah, but it just opens up a number of possibilities, right? They can do things now. I'm never saying they would do that, but they could do things now with already established characters that probably weren't going to do before. So, you know, maybe we get Ryan Reynolds back as the Green Lantern.
he deserves another shot. He was good.
Yeah, someone was teasing that, some news about Ryan Reynolds. I've seen a couple of things on Twitter with people teasing with that specific version of Green Lantern.
If Ryan Reynolds is the Green Lantern in Flashpoint, that would even get me more excited for this movie, to be really honest.
I'd be so jazzed.
Yeah. You know?
And if Mark Strong was the Sinestro, yes, that's the real.
Yeah.
So good in that role. So, I mean, just really too bad we didn't get more of him, because I was primed and ready to see some Sinestro.
He was great in Shazam, though. I mean, he got some redemption.
Yes, absolutely.
He was. So what are the chances now that Keaton bumps into himself in the MCU as Vulture, as Batman? Where do we go with this? We have crossed now both. We have a DC film universe. We have an MCU. Bam. Let's make it happen. Let's do it. Keaton 89 Batman meets Vulture MCU. Boom. I'm in.
In the Justice League versus Avengers movie?
There we go. We've got to make this stuff happen.
What if that's the long con? Get the hashtags. Fire them up. Let's go. I demand it. Get a petition.
It's the new one of the week.
Sorry, guys. Am I not supposed to make those jokes on your show? I didn't see the editorial guidelines around that.
Eric only has one rule.
There are no rules.
Good. I'm still too Minnesota nice to curse on a mic, though. So, you know, I keep it PG.
Oh, geez.
And Justin Kowalski also mentioned about Dr. Chase Meridian being Aquaman's mother.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah.
Has it been reported that Batman Forever and Batman and Robin were ignored?
Yes, they did.
I think
the Hollywood Reporter.
That's kind of a bummer on the day that Joel Schumacher passes.
Yeah, you know, it is like, a little bit. And who knows?
Peace, maybe Joel, we're going to forget your movie.
Maybe they soften that a bit. Because at least to me, and I think probably to you guys, that was the same Bruce Wayne through all those movies, right? Like,
yeah,
different to me.
Yeah, different stylistic approaches to the storytelling, but that's the same Bruce. And I'll listen, say this,
if you want to forget Batman and Robin, go ahead, but you do not forget Batman Forever.
No, don't do it. And Pete, I thought you had a lot of really good comments on the BOF Batman Forever show around sort of the redemption. You and our pal Haas were talking about sort of the through line of those three movies and really influenced the actions of Bruce in Batman and Returns, really were heavily present if you're looking for them in Batman Forever. So yeah, I would be bummed out if that doesn't include any of it, but if it means there's a chance that the older Bruce Wayne is married to the older Selina Kyle and we get Michelle Pfeiffer in these movies and it's bats and cats on the big screen, I'm all about that too.
How about this? What if they finally come out and say the Schumacher movies are not in the Burton universe, they're their own separate thing, and then we have Keaton standing next to George? Can you?
I mean, dare to dream at this point, right? Yeah. Like, it seems like nothing's off limits anymore.
I know Val's not doing too well, and I wish him the best, but, you know, Keaton and Clooney next to each other being two different Batmans, I'd love that. And Clooney should rock the blue nipple suit. Don't change a damn thing. Don't do it. Keaton should have the extra points on his emblem in this Flashpoint movie, without a doubt. Give him those two extra points. That's another thing too, is what the yellow oval makes its cinematic return on Keaton's Batman. I finally did it. You heard it here first. I finally did it.
Made this happen. The hashtag works. Once again, if you think hashtag campaigns don't work, there's another
wrong movie, right agenda. I finally did it, and I just realized it.
Vindicated.
I did it. I won. Yes.
You are.
So obviously, we know the story is going to be a little different, right? I mean, in Flashpoint, it's Thomas, not Bruce. So, you know, I'm interested to see how this thing fills in now. I'm interested to see where they go with it.
I think it's a Flashpoint in sense of it'll involve the Flash doing something that changes time, and he needs an assist from a Batman.
Right. Right.
Essentially, that's what I think Flashpoint is, and I think that's their angle. And I'm pumped it's not Thomas Wayne Batman, because like him and the Batman Who Laughs, if you read comic books, you couldn't be sick. You couldn't be more sick of two characters.
So saturated.
Oh, my God. I've never seen two characters take over the world the way they have. And it's
so much, and they're in everything. Put them in everything. Oh, man, here's 20 issues of, Thomas Wayne and Bruce, you know, walking through the desert telling a nursery rhyme. Like, come on, Thomas, give me a break with this stuff. So I agree.
Crazy.
And I don't know that the real general audience is, like, clamoring for Thomas Wayne Batman. Like, that'd be cool for us, but I think it's way cooler for millions and millions of more people to have it Michael Keaton.
Yes, that would be so confusing if they did that. Yeah. Like if they threw in Thomas Wayne, they'd be like, what? The general audience, I hate to say it, I don't want, but they're not hip to this stuff. And they would completely confuse them. People still were confused after we had Bale to Affleck thinking it was the same Batman.
Oh yeah. My buddy's a prime example. People thought
Begins was a prequel to 89. Like, it's ridiculous. Huh? People thought Begins was a prequel to 89 at one point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's they get easily confused. The GA,
they're it's not true.
You know, maybe it's good for them that they don't obsess over all this stuff like we do, but it sure makes it fun to laugh at, right?
Hey, this is a good distraction with everything going on. You this is some good news today.
You need it.
But, yeah. So, wait, what about going forward now, guys? Do you think since we have an older Batman, maybe we'll get a Batman Beyond movie?
No, I think the next stage is the Nicolas Cage Superman makes an appearance somewhere. Like, I'm serious. I think they're just going to start pulling these old ideas and just try to build this multiverse thing. And I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Like, I'm thinking,
think,
like, what? What other things can they pull from? Swamp
I think they will know. Get a. I think we will get a Batman Beyond ish take. I don't think it's going to be Batman. I don't think it's going to be Bruce and Terry. I think it's Bruce as older mentor, sort of. He's the Jedi Master, and he has some young Padawans, and he's and he is the strategist, and he is sort of the mind leading the team. And maybe you get a, you know, who knows? He's not that old. Michael Keaton's not that old.
68 years old.
Where you couldn't stick him in a Kingdom Come type exoskeleton, right? Like maybe you do that in a battle scene. But for the most part, I think he's going to be the guy. What do they say in Spider-Man? Pete, you wouldn't know. What's Ned say? The guy in the chair, guy in the desk. I think that's going to be Keaton's role. He's a strategist. He's the mentor. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was a subtle shot. Subtle shot.
I love MCU Spider-Man. Iron Boy forever. It's great.
I like it too. Yeah. I like it too. That'll be our first MCU discussion when we do the MCU show. It's going to be Spider-Man.
I'm going to be friend sick. Or foe. That's what literally, I'm not going to be there.
Far from Pete. Spider-Man.
Far from Peter Parker. I actually had something to say. I forgot what it was. You totally made me forget what
I said. Bear, you totally threw him off.
Yeah. My bad. Sorry, man.
Well, we have kind of a mentoring Bruce Wayne in Titans, right? We have Ian Glenn's character there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a mentor to Dick in that show. So we kind of have something like that, a blueprint for that. So I wonder if they do something similar. And that's how they build around this specific character. Or if it's just a one-off and we only see him once. Like, I have no idea. But
it'd be interesting to see if Terry McGinnis stumbles upon the Batcave at the end of Flashpoint and that leads us into a Batman Beyond. But I don't know if we'd see a Michael Keaton wear a mech suit like we saw in BVS. I feel like, I don't know. It's weird. Like every time you feel like Warner Brothers is trying to move on from Zack Snyder or the Zack Snyder era, they just seem to like hark back right to it. And it's just, it's very interesting. Their business decisions over like the last 4 years.
Yeah, you know? It really
like,
is.
A year ago, they told us like they weren't doing shared universes. And now they're like, it's a multiverse. And it's like, you guys have no idea what you're doing over there.
Well, I do know that was always the plan with Flash. Because in every single interview that Ezra Miller did about The Flash, he always mentioned that it was a multiverse type thing that they were trying to
set
up. And
that's what The Flash does. Like, in essence, The Flash is the greatest hero in the DCU. Like, he's always the one who ends up sacrificing himself, especially Barry Allen, for the greater good. And, you know, it happened, as I said, like I mentioned Infinite Crisis. Like, it's kind of similar. It sounds similar. And it's interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, could we see a true anti-Monitor? You know, I have no idea. Like, it's just how cosmic and how DCU are they going to get? Like, how sweaty can you get with this? It's the possibilities are endless once you actually find out what they're doing. But there's a lot of theories you can come up with.
Pulling Perpetua in the Source Wall from the stuff I mean, that Snyder's been doing. Not Zack Snyder, but Scott Snyder. As he closed out his run on Justice League. Yeah, it's really interesting. I shouldn't ask questions on air for you know, I shouldn't ask questions that I don't know somebody has the answers for on air, because that doesn't always make for interesting listening. But when we're done talking, I'm going to look up and see when Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse comes out and see if this is DC's way to get at the multiverse before Marvel somehow.
Yeah, it's possible. I hope, but that could be also a cautionary tale from what they tried to do in the past. They should stay in their own lane. Do your thing.
Multiverse of Madness. What's the name of that one?
Isn't that what it is?
Multiverse Darkness? Of Madness. I think I said Into the Multiverse. I was thinking Into the Spider-Verse, but you guys were with me. You got it.
you've watched one movie. You've watched them all.
Does some things, meets some people, light in the sky, done.
I love Doctor Strange, so that's just
me too.
That's me. I do. That was one of my favorites in the MCU. So, but yeah, this is gonna be it's gonna be fun, and it seems like we keep getting more interesting things coming out of the studio now. Ever since the HBO Max thing happened, we're getting like interesting tidbits that leak out about things that might happen, and then you're like, oh crap, look what it is. So,
and this is gonna be. Andor is coming. It's like, can you imagine what they're going to announce then?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That fandom thing. Yeah, we talked about it last time, but it's so cool. I love that they're doing it.
I can't
wait.
It's
going to be so much fun. So much fun.
It's going to be epic. Everything just sounds epic to begin with. Like, it just, it's weird. Like, we had like a really bad, like the Justice League part, like around that time of that movie was so down. I feel like we're so high up and just in a different area, you know, just everything's different now.
Well, they got lucky. Even though Shazam didn't make a ton of money, it was still critically acclaimed.
I love that movie.
And then Aquaman was $1 billion film. So, you know, they're riding a good wave now and just keep it going. You know, you have the Snyder Cut coming out that the fans wanted. So now that's coming. Now we have this fandom thing that we just talked about. That's coming next month.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. DC is really there. I will say this. They're giving their fans things that they're asking for, which is great. And, you know, it may not always be the best business decisions, but that's for them to worry about. That's their money. That's not for me to worry about or for you to worry about. So it's going to be it's going to be an interesting next couple years. We have the Batman coming out. You have Wonder Woman 84 coming in October.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then what's after that? Do we know? When's the Trench movie coming out? Do we know when that's coming out?
Was that officially announced? I don't even know.
I definitely know. Juan announced he was doing it. I remember that. I don't know if it has an official date though. So. But that's something I'm looking forward to. Like, that's completely different and going to be off the wall. So I'm really looking forward to that one too. So yeah, DC has just changed things in a short amount of time. And it just goes to show you that if you take, you know, you start caring about your products and your IP and what your fans tell you they want, you know, good things start to happen. So, well, on that note, I think we're going to shut this baby down. So Pete, do you have anything to plug?
Just follow me on social media, Vero, Instagram, Twitter, @PeteIllustrated, one handle, lots of opinions, argue with me, go for it. And be sure to follow our show, Twitter and Instagram, @straight_o_g, straight OG, and pay attention for all our Grundy alerts, because Eric missed one today.
Oh, wait, Pete, we forgot one thing we wanted to discuss.
Oh, we can announce the winner, actually, because the poll's over. We've been trying to do fun things. So I've been doing vehicle polls, you know, and it's kind of like tournament style, and I'll pit two vehicles together. I did the 89 Batwing and the Batwing from Batman Forever and 89 won. So now we can check. I'll tell you the live. Oh, we have 35 minutes left. But the Bat is still winning 56% to 43% versus the Batwing from BVS. So if you haven't voted, vote in our poll, because that Batwing is going to take on the 89 Batwing. And then the winner of that round will play the Batcopter for the championship.
What about the Batboat one? What happened with that one?
That was won by the Batski Boat from Batman Returns. They beat the Batboat from Batman Forever. The Batboat from Batman Forever beat the Batboat from Batman 66.
Yes.
We're going Batboat crazy here.
Well, I enjoy the polls. So all you guys know, Pete doesn't tell me he's doing these things. He just puts up a poll. They're like, oh, look at that. So, but it's awesome. I enjoy it. So as a fan, Pete, as a fan of our show and your part in our show, I'm a fan of this, and thank you for doing it.
You've got 34 minutes left. Vote 30 votes. See who can do it. The Batwing has come.
I did vote. I voted.
It's come from behind. A miracle turnout. Come back.
So, the winner of Mr. Minnesota, Garrett Grev, what is your anything to plug?
Oh, man. I got to plug this appearance on this rad podcast I have that's going to drop pretty soon. It's called Straight Outta Gotham. If you guys want to follow that one, you can listen to me talk about Michael Keaton and get really excited about it. Besides this. I don't. I'm writing comic book reviews again since we have comic books. So you can catch those over at batmanonfilm.com. Justice League and Batman Superman are my titles. You can follow me on social media. You find me at over at Twitter. I'm at Garrett, W-A-T-O. So that's Garrett Wato, G-A-R-R-E-T-W-A-T-O. I talk about a lot of Batman, Superman, Star Wars, my kids, He-Man, and then fantasy football is my thing. So, and right now, just waiting to see if we get some football this year. So everybody stay home, stay safe, wash your hands, wear masks, because I want to watch some football this fall. Please.
Yeah, Garrett and I, well, we might be working on something with fantasy football. We're going to talk about that. We'll see what's going on there. But to find me, guys, as Pete mentioned, you can always hit up the Straight Outta Gotham Twitter handle. I answer it as well. Pete and I both share that account. My personal Twitter handle is at finally33. It's spelled finale33. That's also the same on Instagram. Definitely come at me over there to discuss things that you heard on this podcast, any of our podcasts, anything you want to talk about, like football. You want to talk other characters, Star Wars. I'm also He-Man. You can even go Voltron with me or Transformers or all those other geeky things from my childhood. You guys want to talk about G.I. Joe. I like G.I. Joe. We can go there. All that stuff. You can find me there. So any closing words, guys?
No.
Keaton gives beatings.
That's a great hashtag. Batmania, baby.
All right, so for Pete, Vera, and Garrett Grev, I am Eric Holzman. This is Straight Outta Gotham. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.